Hi there, this is Dr. Isla Bates. I'm the host of Healer Heal Yourself, Reduce Burnout, Discover Your Creativity While You Heal Others. This is a podcast where I interview clinicians who are doing phenomenal, creative, artistic things that are healing to them in some way. And today I'm going to interview Priya Gayadeen, who is an RN and a stand-up comic. She is part of the Cougar Collective, a group of women over 50 who are doing stand-up comedy. And they can be found at www.cougarcomedycollective.com. I hope you enjoy this interview, and I hope it inspires you to become a stand-up comic if that's something that you're interested in pursuing. Thanks so much for listening, and I hope you enjoy the interview.
Why don't we start by having you introduce yourself?
Sure. I am Priya Gayadeen. I'm also a single mom, and I'm 53 years old. My son is 8. I'm a nurse by trade, and I've been in the healthcare arena for, you know, more than 20 years. I started out as a bedside nurse and then went back to school and did my BSN and my master's, and then transitioned into clinical research, which was an area that I didn't know nurses could even go into. And it was somebody who, you know, I was working as a study coordinator at a small site, and it was a person, a monitor, who came to, you know, audit our work, that kind of introduced me to that side of the world. And so I transitioned into clinical research. And that was a wonderful career transition for me because it allowed me to travel. I got to see a lot of the United States, a lot of the rest of the world. And I lived in Brazil for 13 years. I went there with my company to manage their clinical trials and then ended up staying for 13 years. And that's where my son was born. And it was in like 2014. Economy in Brazil took a downturn. So we decided, or I decided, well, you know, maybe it's time to go back to North America. And so we first came to Canada, where I grew up and stayed with my family for about a year. And then I thought, well, I got to, you know, find a job to now feed two mouths.
Right.
And so I started to look for work back in the United States, and I knew I wasn't going to be able to live in a cold climate again. So I focused on California, and some job opportunities presented itself in the Bay Area. And that's where we ended up moving to. And that's where we reside. And then the pandemic hit, and I found myself at home with a then 6-year-old and having to juggle being a single mom and being a teacher and being an employee. And it was all extremely overwhelming. And I felt like I need to find something to help me get through this, or I'm going to need bail money pretty soon, yeah. You know? And so my friend was doing, she started these virtual open mics. And I'd always been told I was a funny person, and I was always the jester in my family growing up. Mm-hmm. And people have asked me throughout my life if I've ever considered stand-up. And I never did, because I was always afraid of being rejected on stage and the bombing and how that would, you know, what kind of mental effect that would have on me. And so when she started this virtual open mic, I thought, well, this is probably the safest space to do that and the safest time to try, because, you know, the risk of failing is a lot lower when you're just on a computer screen. And so I wrote some kind of mediocre bad jokes, but people laughed and they kept laughing. And I thought, oh, I'm funny.
All right.
You know,
that's awesome.
And I kept doing those virtual open mics, and people kept laughing. And I thought, huh, you know, maybe there's something here. And I've always wanted to pursue a creative path, but coming from, you know, we're of East Indian descent. You know, my parents were born in Guyana, South America. I was born there, but we brought up an extremely strict culture. You know, there was only four options for career choice, you know, doctor, lawyer, engineer. Right. And you didn't have the opportunity to choose what you wanted to do. And mom pushed me into healthcare. And, you know, as a young child without any real sense of the world and, you know, what you could do on your own, I just said, okay, you know, so I pursued that path and I was able to leverage it to be able to do other things, but it was never my true passion. My true passion was to be an actress or to be performing. And once I started doing stand-up comedy, those creative juices got going again. And, you know, I remembered I always enjoyed writing. I always enjoyed creative writing. Even as a child, I would write creative stories and then tell them to my parents. I would put on these little one-woman shows for my parents as a kid. And, you know, it's like, I'm tapping into that desire again. And I thought, you know, I'm 53 now. I'm not going to walk away from this calling again, which I felt like I did as a younger person. I said, I'm not going to do it again. I said, I've got to follow this passion. I've got to follow this desire. I've got to follow this fire in me and just see where it takes me, you know? Of course, being smart about it, you know, I mean, I still have to put a kid through college, so I can't necessarily completely walk away from a steady income, right? That the day job provides. But I'm slowly putting things in place to eventually, hopefully, transition to being able to do something creative full time and be able to have that as my sole income to be able to, you know, be able to take care of my son, but at the same time, fulfill my own happiness and my own desire, you know. And, you know, having been in the corporate world for, you know, 20 plus years, once I started doing stand-up and seeing the possibilities through it, I was like, I can't do a desk job forever. I couldn't do it really even when I was doing it. You know, I found myself, well, I was one of those people who changed jobs about every 2 years or about every 3 years, or I'd find one where I could like tolerate it for about 4 years and then I'd move on. So I was always moving on. Yeah. So that's a long-winded version of my story.
Yeah. The open mics are what really got you connected again with that creative part of yourself.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And it's still a challenging process, right?
Yeah. Well, how'd you come up with writing your jokes? Now, I secretly want to be a stand-up comic too.
Don't do it.
Yeah. That's what they told me about being a physician. I was told, don't do it. I did it anyway. So I have a history of not living.
And that's good.
But yeah, so, you know, where do you begin? How did you know where to begin?
Well, like most stand-up comedians, you start writing about what you know. And so I was writing about being a single mom. I was writing about being a single mom in a pandemic. I was writing about my son, you know, doing virtual kindergarten and all the challenges around that. And those are the things I started to write about.
I see.
And at first I would write jokes and they didn't really particularly have a joke structure to them, or you know, I didn't understand the technical mechanics of joke writing, and I just wrote from my head and what I thought was funny, and I would get some laughs. But then once I transitioned to doing stand up in person, when things started to open up again and I started to go to live open mics and started to do some shows, and then realizing like I would be telling jokes for 5 or 10 minutes, but maybe only getting one or two laughs, or maybe not getting any laughs at all and bombing repeatedly.
Yeah.
What is going on? What's, you know, why isn't this all of a sudden not working? So then I sought out classes and, you know, coaches, writers to sort of help me understand the technicalities around, you know, stand up. Because it's like any other profession, if you will. You know, you wouldn't just go into an operating room and assume that you could do a surgery. You know, there's steps that you have to go through to get there, right? You got to learn about it first and then certify in it and then practice. And then, you know, eventually you get to do that. And it's the same thing with stand up. So, you know, you learn about it and you practice it and you eventually get better at it. And it's the difference with a creative venture is that, you know, there's always that search for perfection and you never really get to that point. Right. And I think stand-up comedians go through that too. So, you know, you write about what's important to you and, you know, you'll start out with like a topic list, like I'll write about being a single mom, write about my son, write about work, write about your point of view of the world around you. And what I've noticed is the more that you do it, the more observant you become about the world around you. And you find the funny in those things. And then your stand-up hopefully develops into more meaningful, a more meaningful monologue on stage than sort of talking about the general things that most people will start out talking about. But that's where most comics will start. Mm-hmm. You know, because that's what you know.
Right. Yeah. So tell us, give us an idea of what the quote technical things might be, because let us in on.
Oh, sure. So, you know, each joke has a setup and a punch, mm-hmm. punchline.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're writing, you want to write your setup the setup is basically your opinion about something, and generally it's a negative opinion because that tends to be funnier than saying something positive that people might all understand or agree. And your audience wants to know what's your point of view on something. So your setup usually starts out with a negative opinion about something, mm-hmm. and it needs to be funny.
Yeah.
And you also want to keep it short. Your jokes need to be about 15 words, you know, between a setup and a punchline.
Okay.
And so you want to get your joke or your idea down to the least amount of words and to the least amount of funny words, mm-hmm. because you obviously are, you know, it's not a speech, mm-hmm. and the idea is to get your audience laughing and you want to keep your audience laughing. And so a lot of coaches and comics will teach you that, you know, you want to go for 5 laughs per minute with your jokes. So if you're doing a 5-minute set and you have to do 5 laughs per minute, right? Yeah. That's mm-hmm. 25 jokes.
Yeah.
You would have to 25 one-liners, for example, to mm-hmm. come up with, you want to keep that rhythm going. So each joke starts out with a setup and then ends with a punchline. Mm-hmm. And as you develop your craft, then you would have act outs in there. And what they call tags, that's how you keep that laugh going. So you would tell one liner, for example, and get a laugh, and then have a tag on that, and then act something out to keep that laugh going for mm-hmm. a minute, for example,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then you do it again, the next joke. And that's where the challenge comes in, because when you're writing from your point of view. And so it's definitely funny to you, but you may not be able to get it across to an audience for them to see your point of view and, you know, mm-hmm. be able to laugh at it,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's the struggle most comics have when they're writing. You know, they say it takes about 3 years to write a good 5-minute set. And for me, that's been the case. You know, I'm about 3.5 years in and it's taken me about that time to write a very good, funny 5 minutes, you know?
Yeah.
And professional comedians that are on the road and working every day, you know, they're working towards a new 30-minute set every year.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so that takes a long time to come up with the funny.
Mm-hmm. Well, the name of this podcast is Healer, Heal Yourself, Reduce Burnout, Discover Your Creativity While You Heal Others. How has being a comedian helped you?
Oh, gosh, it's helped me tremendously. it's helped me to be able to let go, you know, and just let things happen, because there's so much uncertainty in comedy. And I produce a show, as you know, your nephew may have mentioned, I produce a show called Cougars on the Loose, and it features comedians of a certain age. And we talk about this time of life, you know, being in this, being in your 50s and what it's like and the things you've accomplished and the things that you've encountered. And it's about celebrating life through humor. And that has taught me so much in how to work with people, how to talk to people, how to negotiate, you know, and basically how to sort of accept the unknown and learn to live in the moment, because you cannot, you just, there's so many things out of control. You can't force people to go to your show, you know, and without an audience, stand-ups are not very funny, because you need the laughter. You know, all comedians have their own personalities, so you're learning to accept and deal with different personalities, because you're going to be working with them. You know, you don't get to decide what shows you get to be on necessarily when you're starting out, so you know you're going to be working with all different types of comedians. And you know, it's kind of taught me how to sort of manage that, how to work with that, how to accept different personalities, you know, and how to accept failure, because you fail a lot.
Right.
And it teaches you to kind of develop a thick skin and say, hey, it's part of the process. You have to fail and stand up to get better, you know. And I've failed a lot and still do sometimes. And each time it's a learning experience, you know?
Yeah.
And I think, you know, stand-up has just really taught me how to develop those soft skills that, you know, you need in the corporate world, right, that you don't really learn in the corporate world. I would recommend to anybody to try stand-up, just to sort of get a sense and be exposed to the real human experience, because you meet people at shows in the audience that some are really going to connect with you, and you know they're really going to be appreciative and enjoying what you're saying and up on stage and identifying with that, and you're going to have audience members who don't at all, you know, who don't like you
at all,
what you said. Don't get you, judge you, you know, they're judging you the entire time you're up there. You can't even get them to crack a smile, you know?
Yes.
And I think getting to see that is a really interesting experience for me, because when you're, for example, as a physician or even a nurse as me, you're kind of, you've got one view, you've got exposure to one type of environment, you know, you're seeing people who are ill and people who are, you know, experiencing, you know, health issues.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so you're only working with that group of people. When you get to do stand up, you get to see people from a wide array of life experiences. And some will say, you know, oh my God, when you were telling that joke, I totally identified. I had the same situation with my son, or I'm a single mom and I'm a nurse, and, you know. And then you're going to get other people that are like, you know, I didn't like your joke. It was too political. I didn't like what you said about that. That was offensive.
Yeah, there's always one. There's always somebody.
Right.
Who has to say something negative. I found that through speaking, you know, and it's funny. Oftentimes we only remember that one person who says something negative, right? Even though 100 people have said something positive.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. It's very challenging dealing with the public. So who was your most receptive audience? Do you recall being somewhere, whether it's a state or a, you know, an environment that was really receptive, and your best performance?
Yeah.
What was that?
So when I started doing live in-person open mics, the second one I did was at a small dive bar near my house, and I asked my friend to come with me. In the Bay Area.
Uh-huh.
And I asked my friend to come with me, and I I was watching the comedians going up and the audience was heckling them a lot. You know,
right.
And when you're doing open mics in a bar, it's a different environment as opposed to doing an open mic in a library for, you know, for example, right? Yes. It's a different type of people. So, you know, I was freaking out. And I was like, yeah. I was going up later in the lineup and I was freaking out. I said to my friend, they're going to eat me alive. What am I going to do? I was so nervous and so scared. Then I just remember getting up there and an audience member said something to me and I just riffed on it. And all of a sudden I had their attention and I just went into my set and it was like an outer body experience. I don't really remember what I said or what I did, but the audience was so engaged and laughing and listening. And then at the end, when I was leaving, I got a standing ovation, you know, like, wow, it was such a, such an incredible experience. It's hard to explain unless you're really there, but I felt like I was outside of my body looking at the whole thing. Cause I was like, I couldn't believe that happened. And I thought, okay, well, I've mastered stand-up, but you know, I'm a pro, I'm ready.
Yeah.
You know, and then we go to another one.
Did someone videotape that, that set?
And that set was not videotaped. So of course it was great. I had a great experience, but we didn't capture it on tape. And I've had a couple moments like that since that I have been able to get a recording on. But those, they're so few and far between, and comics will tell you that too, that, you know, you can have, when you get like a set that's a 9 out of 10. So I was saying that, you know, you get those sort of like really amazing moments very rarely in stand-up. And even pro comics will say that, you know, when they might have a 9 out of 10 or a 10 out of 10 set, but those don't happen all the time. Most of the time you're kind of like around a 6 or 7, just depending on the audience.
Right.
So, but that was a really impactful moment for me. Cause I thought, wow, I didn't believe I was going to be able to have this entire audience.
Yeah. Engage
me laughing at
an extent.
Yeah. Engage.
Yeah. Well, that's wonderful. That must have propelled you on to doing a lot more, you know.
Kept me going. It kept me going. And then, you know, I would bomb. And I would bomb for like 5 mics. And then you're like, what am I doing? Why am I doing this? And, you know, you're listening to all the negative thoughts in your head. And, you know, and that happens a lot with comedians, you know, and probably with any creative person. And you have to find a way to work through that if you keep it going, you know.
Yeah, I always say when I'm drawing or painting something, there's a point in the middle where I think this isn't turning out well, and I just have to push through it and keep going. I think with any creative endeavor, you just have to kind of push through those moments of doubt, self-doubt, which will creep up and affect you.
Absolutely. It can be very crippling, you know. Some in stand-up comedy, some comedians walk away, and they say that if you hit the 3-year mark and you're still going, then you're probably going to stick with it, because most comedians will do it for about 3 years, realize it's not for me, or I can't do it or whatever. And for me, I love the creative process. I love writing. Mm-hmm. I love performing. Mm-hmm. I don't care so much for the producing and the technical parts and the business part of it, but most comedians don't. Nobody wants to do that part. You know.
Yeah, totally.
But it's all part of the process.
Yeah.
It's all part of the learning process.
So you grew up in Guyana.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was born there, and my parents emigrated to Canada when I was 2. So I'm pretty much in Canada. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. You know, I lived in Guyana too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Till I was 6, and then came to the United States. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So you went from Jamaica to Guyana?
No, I was in St. Kitts. I went from St. Kitts
where
I was born. to Guyana, where my father's from. My father was Guyanese. My mother was from Dominica. So
that's amazing.
Yeah. And my sister moved to Jamaica. I had two sisters that moved to Jamaica, but I was not from there. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, no, that's great.
Yeah. So, yeah.
You have probably more memories of it than I do, for sure.
Definitely do. And I was actually working on a children's book about some of my memories of Guyana, because, you know, they were kind of idyllic in some ways.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
No, it's great. That's great. I wish there's not a big Caribbean community on the West Coast. And that's something I miss.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, there is one here in Brooklyn.
You have so much exposure to it on the East Coast, and yeah, and then you have little Guyana and Queens, New York, and you know, in Toronto, there's like a Caribbean restaurant on every street corner, you know, or Caribbean grocery store too, and you just don't have that on the West Coast. And I think it's unfortunate, because, you know, there's such a rich history with the Caribbean, and the culture is amazing. But I do tell some jokes about being from Guyana and being Guyanese.
Yeah.
And those jokes tend to not land as hard as my other jokes about being a mom and having a kid and all those kind of things, because it's not a part of history that they're really familiar with.
Right. Some people don't know where Guyana is.
Right. Yeah, I get that a lot.
Yeah, people think Guyana is in Africa somewhere. So there are
exactly
people who just don't know where it is. So you have to educate them, I guess, in some ways through your jokes.
When I talk to people and I tell them I'm from the Caribbean, the first thing they say is, oh, I've been to Jamaica. Yes. And I'm like, oh, that's nice, but the Caribbean's a little bit bigger than that.
A lot bigger than that. I know my mother would be annoyed when people assumed she was from Jamaica, because, you know, she had an accent. And I think people from the islands are offended if you pick the wrong one, you know, because there's so many and they're so diverse and so different.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And people are proud of where they come from.
Yeah. Right. I do find it funny, though, that, you know, living in the Bay Area, people aren't as knowledgeable about Guyana, because, you know, that's where the whole Jim Jones thing started. So
exactly.
I think it's kind of funny. And I do try to kind of highlight that in some of my comedy, but, you know, people are sensitive. And so sometimes they find that they're a little uncomfortable with that, but
yeah,
I'm like, I'm just stating a fact.
Yeah. It's a pretty negative association, but yes, he kind of put it on the map, right?
Yeah, exactly. Right. Not in the way we'd hoped, but
we hoped at all. Yeah. So, I have very fond memories of you know, living there for the short amount of time that I was there.
Right. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So
I remember going back when I was 10.
Oh, you did?
That's the only time.
Ah.
Yeah.
Okay.
But that's the only time I've been, and I have some fond memories of being there as well. Yeah.
Nice. And do you have a connection to Jamaica at all?
No, outside of my friends that I grew up with, because obviously growing up in Toronto, there was a large, like most of us, a large diaspora that came over here. So, you know, you had Guyanese people, you had Trinidadian people, you had Jamaican people. And most of my friends growing up were Jamaican, and that was my exposure to Jamaican culture, you know, so I've listened to Jamaican rappers with my friends, you know, partaken in and Jamaican food. I mean, I love jerk chicken and ackee and saltfish and all that kind of stuff, you know? And so I learned more about it through my friends growing up.
Yeah. Nice. So tell me about this group that you formed with the Cougars.
Yeah. So yeah, again, when I was starting my stand-up comedy journey, I wasn't really finding a lot of mics where there were other comedians telling similar stories to mine. Mm-hmm. I wasn't meeting comedians in my age group. I wasn't finding comedians that I could look to study, to learn, female comedians. There just wasn't a lot out there. And so I said to a friend, why don't we, you know, put together a show with, you know, female comedians of our age group. And he thought the idea was great and reached out to a local bar and they thought the idea was great. And so he was like, what should we call the show? And I said, well, first we were going to call it Cougars in Captivity because we were still in lockdown. But then things opened up by the time the show came around. So I said, call it Cougars on the Loose, you know, and we had fantastic turnout for the first show. And nice. I thought, okay, it'll just be, you know, that was nice. I got a chance to be on stage and, you know, I thought it was going to be a one-off. And then all these comedians started coming out of the woodwork and reaching out to me about the show. And I started meeting comedians my age and comedians doing stories like mine. And I thought, you know, and each show we did more shows and each show we'd have more people coming out and more people coming out. And I thought, you know, there's something here.
Definitely.
And I decided to create the Cougar Comedy Collective to kind of bring together comedians in this age group. And we turned it into a nonprofit to be able to, you know, celebrate age through humor, work with local venues, help to stimulate local economies by putting together these shows and taking them to different venues. Yeah, it's been going on now for over a year. Yeah, we have 4 shows. We will be at the Broadway Comedy Club.
So how does someone join the collective? What do they have to do?
So we do have a talent submission form on our website, which is www.cougarcomedycollective.com. At the bottom of our page, comedians that are interested in performing on our shows can submit through the talent submission form. And then as we tour and take the show to other cities, I'm always reaching out to look for local comedians to be part of the show so that we're highlighting the talent in those cities. We also have a board and comedians can, we have elections and comedians can apply to be part of the board if they would like to. But right now we're just trying to grow our roster of comedians so that we can, you know, spread the word and spread the show around different cities in the United States and hopefully abroad.
Yeah, no, that's exciting. It's exciting. It sounds like you've grown tremendously in the past year.
Yeah. Sometimes when I sit back and look at all the things that have happened with this particular show, I'm like, wow, we've done a lot in 1 year, you know, and I hope that it just continues to grow and develop and get better. And we get to show the world more wonderfully talented, funny comedians that are in this age group.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. It's exciting. So what is your hope for 5 years from now? What do you envision?
Oh, that's a great question. I hope in 5 years from now, I've got my own comedy special. I've done my own comedy special because that's what most comedians need to do is put out, you know, either a 30-minute or a 1-hour comedy special. Yeah. And I hope that's done. I hope that we can do the show Cougars on the Loose and have it be on some of the major networks. So whether Amazon Prime, Netflix, Hulu, I'm hoping that the show will be able to get the show on a network. And I'm hoping that the collective will grow to the point where we have got, you know, franchises for lack of a better word in different places. So we can have the show running on the East Coast. We can have the show running on the West Coast. We can have the show running internationally. And we've grown the body of the collective with comedians all around the world. And maybe hopefully eventually we can do a festival that is targeted to comedians of a certain age.
Yeah, no, that sounds fantastic. So do you think that comedy is a great outlet for burnout, for physician burnout?
Oh, absolutely. I think everybody should try stand-up at least once in their life, even if it's not something that they're going to pursue professionally.
Yeah.
It's such a humbling experience.
Yeah.
And
we all need to be humbled.
We can all use an education and a humility.
That's for sure.
And I think that's what stand-up teaches you. You have got to be humble. You've got to be kind. You've got to be accepting. You have to be patient. You have to be, you need to be eager, but you also don't want to be over eager, you know. It just gives you an exposure to the human condition. You're going to be performing in places that you would never have imagined yourself performing in. You're going to meet people of all walks of life that you wouldn't otherwise have an opportunity to meet. And I think that is so important. Sometimes we get women that come to our shows. Like one show we did, we had a woman that came and she gave us jokes. You know, yeah, she was like, oh, I saw your show coming here. Here's some jokes I've written you guys can have, you know, kind of thing. We have women that come up to us and are like, thank you for doing a show like this, you know. So you're going to make a human connection through stand-up that you don't get to do, I think, in other walks of life.
Yeah, well, that's really special. That's,
I think. Yeah.
Sounds really great. Will you have events for lay people like myself who might want to do stand up?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I'm hoping to be able to offer comedy classes to women and men in this age group who may have a story to tell but don't know how to do it. And right now those classes will be offered in the Bay Area, but eventually we might be able to offer them virtually to individuals around the globe who are interested in that. Mm-hmm. Because I think that particularly for our age group, oftentimes, in more so maybe women than men, they have a story to tell, but they don't know what's the right outlet for telling that story. And stand-up can be one outlet, but also stand-up can help you maybe get to wherever it is that you want to with your story, whether it's publishing a book or becoming a national speaker or just being able to give a speech at a family function, you know? And so some of the comedians that I work with are veterans in the stand-up comedy world and teach these types of classes. And we hope to offer those in the near future. And I think if we get to a point where we can put on a festival, we can incorporate things in the festival classes, panel discussions, and things like that.
Sounds amazing. Absolutely amazing. And you're still keeping your day job, huh?
For now, until my son can work and take care of us.
And your day, tell me a little bit more about what you do during the day. You said research and you're a nurse.
Yes, but I still work. I'm a nurse by trade and I still work in the clinical research arena. Right now I work for a vendor. So we support the large pharmaceutical companies that are putting together clinical trials. So they usually need to contract a company like the one I work for to manage their trials. And so I sort of see the management of the trials to make sure that they're you know, hitting their milestones and that it's running on time and we're not running into any issues that would be a question of compliance or there are no issues that are going against regulations and things like that. So, you know, I sort of oversee the trials. And the nice thing is that it's a remote role, so I can work from home. Right. I have the ability to be there for my son, but I can arrange my schedule to incorporate time for my creative endeavor. Whereas when you're working a 9-to-5 and you've got to go into an office every day, it's, you know, it's very hard to maintain your creative desires, if you will.
Right. Really great. That's good that you can do that. So I usually ask my guests, what's your definition of creativity? So tell us.
My definition of creativity is something that feeds your soul.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you've got a burning desire for something and you find yourself always gravitating to that, no matter what's going on in your life, then that's probably your passion, whether it's painting or playing piano or stand-up or theater or acting. And, you know, if you're always finding yourself trying to feed that curiosity about that, that's probably your passion. And that's what creativity is to me, is feeding that passion in your soul, whatever that is.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I think a lot of people get stuck with the how-to, and that prevents them from moving forward. And
absolutely, you create these like very lofty goals for yourself, and then you're like, "How am I going to do that?" Mm-hmm. And you have to step back and say, "Okay, let's break that down into smaller goals."
Exactly.
You know? Maybe steps. Yeah, I write out my goals like every 6 months and I go back and look at them and it's okay. Well, they did 3 out of 5, you know, 5 out of 10, not bad. You know, and then you keep readjusting them, but you have to set up small wins for yourself so that you don't let those negative thoughts take over.
yes, for sure. Well, thank you so much, Priya. It's been great speaking with you. Where can people find you on, you know, social media or other places?
Yeah. So they can connect with us on Facebook at Cougar Comedy Collective or on Instagram under the same name. I also have my own Instagram for my own personal comedy journey, which is Flawed and Fabulous.
Okay.
They can find me under Flawed and Fabulous on Facebook or Instagram. And they can connect with us through our website, www.cougarcomedycollective.com.
Okay, wonderful. That sounds great. All right. I think it's a wrap.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
This is Dr. Isla Bates. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you'd like to listen to more of these episodes, please do and leave a review if you like them. This helps me to produce more podcasts like this one. And if you like the content and want to know more about me, I can be seen on Instagram and some of the artwork that I do, as well as LinkedIn and other social media spots. So hope to see you again soon. Sorry, these recordings are a little far apart, but I do them whenever I can, and I hope you enjoy them. Bye now.